part of the interview with Dr. Rudolf Herrmann. This continues directly from the other side of the reel.
The final decision was made to establish the hypersonic wind tunnel at southern Bavaria, close to the Alps, south-east of Munich, near the Schliersee, which is known as Schlier on map, and about 10 kilometers more into the mountains, a small lake called the Spitzing Lake, S-P-I-T-Z-I-N-G. From there, we had about a 600 or 800 meter descent from an upper lake to a lower lake, which we want to establish close to a river. About 1 million mark, which was a great amount of money at this time, and showing the work which we put in by surveying, drilling, to make sure that we could build dams there and put in big pipelines through the mountains, etc. And after this was spent, a drastic decision was done at the Hitler's headquarters. Reason is nearly ridiculous, but shows that even in the war time, where the crisis of the war was high, Leningrad was already passed. In Munich, as Bavaria, was Gauleiter Ritter von Epp, V-O-N, capital E-P-P, a senior man, general officer's been, but at this time he was not an officer, but a director under Hitler, supervising the Bavarian area from the standpoint of the party. And he had, as all the, he had a hunting area and resort, which belonged to him, in the area of the Spitzing Sea. And when he, the people who did, the Bavarians, who did not like that the so-called Prussians from Berlin came with advice that a water power plant and a resource installation should be built, they told him that such a hypersonic tunnel would make a big noise, and they sent somebody to investigate how much noise the wind tunnel at Peenemünde made, and then they said, oh, this at Mach number 4, and that shall be at Mach 10, so that will be multifold. Even that is not so easy to judge, and they tried everything to undercut it, and finally they pointed out that when the wind tunnel would run, the noise would echo from mountain to mountain, and it would increase and swell, and due to the noise, all the animals would disappear, the cows would not give any more milk, so that the small children in the area would die, and also all the deer would disappear.
That was the point.
You could, yeah, there was even made a kind of a slogan poem out of it in order to, under very emotional, it followed two or three very emotional meetings where this was the main point, and only what I could do was to point out that this was a matter of the developing of weapons and in order to defend the country. That those things had to be done. The Gauleiter von Epp went to Hitler and had lunch with him one day, and at this lunch he got from him the order, the counter order against the order which we had from Speer, which permitted us anywhere in the Alp area of the Alps to look for this power area, for the fit to build the power plant to drive the hypersonic tunnel. So Speer's order had to be counteracted and by Hitler's order, certainly superior. At the same time, Speer told Dornberger that we had the permission that we could put it on any other place we wanted it without even asking. And, for instance, they offered Kochel because they're the largest hydro plant in Germany, 120,000 kW at this time, very much was there under operation. They said we could use this. Of course, it turned out that we never could use their turbines and there because they are all dimensioned for different purposes. So we.
You want to take a break? And...
Yeah. With other words, it was impossible, certainly, to use for the drive of the hypersonic tunnel any of the turbines available at the Kochel. So we had to start building there, drilling new tunnels through the mountains for direct application to our turbines. We had then also at the Kochel, they already at least 100 or 200 laborers working in the mountains in conjunction with the establishing of the hydropower. That was roughly in August 1943, and that was a month of the air raid of the Royal Air Force to Peenemünde. This air raid has been described often very dramatic by Dornberger in his book on the V2. I have only to add what referred to the supersonic wind tunnel at Peenemünde at this time. We were very lucky. The bombs, carpets of the bombs, as we called it, were moved a few hundred, 100 or 200 meters too far out to the Baltic coast, as they should have had in comparison, as they should have been. And that saved our supersonic wind tunnel, that we didn't receive any bombs, only one or two small fire bombs, fire which easily were put out by some of the guards there. So even our most sensitive optical equipment, like Schlieren equipment and interferometers, we had two of the largest interferometers built in Germany for our purposes, and also the largest and most sensitive Schlieren equipment in Germany at this time for the purpose of the wind tunnel. They were not disturbed at all. Only the windows were broken. We expected, of course, at this time, any day another air raid, so we hastily put it all together, and first the sensitive equipment, and then later the whole tunnel.
You would not have done this, not for the raid, though.
You would have, yes.
You would have operated, in any event, in Kochel, but not this particular installation.
Yeah, this is correct. The plan without air raid had been that we would leave the Mach number 4.5, or we approached 5.2 at this time, nearly, had to stay in Peenemünde, and so the operation would be not at all interrupted, while we were building at Kochel the Mach number 10 wind tunnel. Yeah. Now, after the air raid, certainly, we had done all the planning. It was just natural that we then decided to move our Peenemünde tunnel to Kochel at the same time and building it up there at the same time while we were designing the Mach 10 tunnel. And this is what was done in about 1st of November. The air raid was August, in the middle of August, and about in 1st of November we started already with people and the first parts arrived in order to rebuild in Kochel the Mach number 4.5 tunnel. The hypersonic tunnel design went into great details. The orders were all, contracts were given to the turbine manufacturers and to the, which was Voith, V-O-I-T-H, in southern Germany for the hydro turbines, and the Braun Boveri in Mannheim for the large air for the axial air compressors. We had to use actually 7 different units, one after the other, in stages, and in each individual unit we had at least 7 or 8 or more individual stages. Altogether, we expected a compression ratio of roughly 1,000 to 1 from one compressor end to the end of the last one, and that we considered necessary to run the Mach number 10 tunnel. Factually, our calculated value was about 700. We used this as an additional safety because nobody knew really what would happen. The work on the Mach 10 tunnel continued until the summer of 44, and after the invasion happened, then all the so-called advanced projects in Germany were cancelled, and so we had to stop all work on the Mach number 10. From summer 44 through the 1st of May in 45, which was, we worked mainly on the development for the ballistic missiles. We had completed at this time the development for the Wasserfall, the anti-aircraft rocket, already, and our main efforts were for the ballistics and anti-aircraft and for armored car anti-armor weapons. We also had a complete nozzle for Mach number 5.2 about in January 40 ready for testing. We had reached in a special arrangement about Mach 7 at Peenemünde in a in a more primitive nozzle, just to see what pressure range you would need, pressure ratio you would need to reach Mach 7. The end of the war came with the fact that around 1st of May, the German army first retreated through Kochel, and then after one day of complete silence, the American army moved in. We worked at the wind tunnel up to the noon at the Saturday at 12 o'clock when the actually American army moved in the same evening. Always, of course, working under the concept that was necessary development for the defense of the country. What else can you do? Talking?
Yeah, that's better.
That's fine. Oh, yeah, I see it. That is right. Yeah, very good. Mm-hmm. You had asked me about our preparation for the end of the war.
Right.
two different things. Of course, we were aware after January 45, after the Russian lines broke down, that we would lose the war, and we wanted, under no circumstances, to be captured by the Russians, but by the Western forces. I made clear with some of my top associates that we would do everything to move out in the direction necessary. We are not at all clear that the Western forces would come first to Kochel, because they moved rather slowly and carefully, to certainly to save manpower, while we did not know what has happened on the Eastern Front. We were aware that in Austria, on the Austrian-Russian border, everything had broken down. We knew that Czechoslovakia was actually occupied by Germany, but would immediately, when there was no power, would fall to into the Russian hands, helping them. So it could be possible that within a few days, with armors, you could go through Czechoslovakia and come to Kochel right away from the east, or from northeast. So we watched this very carefully. We had our bicycles packed for weeks together with our small children to be ready to take off to the west. Fortunately, that was not necessary, and turned out that the Western forces occupied Munich, and then, of course, it was only a matter of a few days to arrive to Kochel. After this was established, our second concern was to preserve as much as possible from the results, either from the actual facilities or from the results of our research.